You're listening to Stories That Matter, a Hawkwood podcast. In this episode, we hear from Ian Banyard on the power of natural mindfulness. Ian is a frequent visitor to Hawkwood. You can find him guiding mindful walks through our woodland or leading workshops to train others in guiding mindful walks.
Often people say to me, we're just spending time in nature. And I said, I'd like to think you were investing time. I'd like to think there was a return on what you're doing. I'm Ian Banyard. I'm the author of Natural Mindfulness, Your Personal Guide to the Healing Power of Nature Connection. I'm a Nature Connection guide, and I've also just launched an international website, Nature Connection World. I aim to encourage as many people as possible to come out into nature and connect with nature, connect with each other, and connect with their true nature, because I believe that when people connect, they care, and when they care, they protect. I've been connecting with nature since I was a child, but I forgot about the benefits of it for a long time. When I then went through some struggles in my own life, I found that it was always nature that I went back to. And then in 2014, I was feeling a little bit unfulfilled, and I was hanging around the house like a bad smell, my wife said. And she said, go for a walk, because whenever you go for a walk, you always seem to come back clearer, and you always seem to come back more kind of motivated and inspired. So I went for a walk, and while I was walking, I came up with this idea of empowering people through exploring nature. So that was in 2014, early 2014. And so I decided to set up walks and introduce people to what I loved, which was walking mindfully in nature without any particular aim in mind in terms of where we're going and what time we have to be there, but just to go and wander, or what I call saunter in nature. And I wanted to see if other people would find that useful. So I started 22nd of August 2014, and I ran my very first walk. 15 people came, and out of the 15 that came, two actually asked me if they could learn to guide walks themselves. Well, I talk about four phases, really. The first one's preparation, so it's preparing for the walk, and that can happen. Days before. I mean, I prepare for it, so I'll come out and I'll go through a walk first to ensure that, if I'm going to guide somebody, I've got to make sure that no trees are falling down, or there's wildlife, sometimes it's a wild stock, the cows will be put out somewhere where we're walking, and so you've got to be careful of all of those things. And from their point of view, preparing in terms of what they wear, making sure that they've got the most appropriate clothing on for when we're walking. But also they prepare themselves in terms of, it's recognising that this is a mindful walk. This isn't a hike. It's not going through, chatting about Brexit or chatting about what the world. This is really about being present there. So there's a sort of a preparation, so getting ready for it, and putting some purpose into it. I'm not it's not really just about being mindful for well-being, which is wonderful to be mindful and just be in that space, but it's also making it purposeful, making it how can being mindful in nature transfer into your life, so have some sort of purpose behind why you're going for this walk. And after the preparation, it's a case of going out and it just experiencing, and it's like now I can hear the water here trickling behind us, and I'm experiencing it, I can hear it. I can also hear a plane, two sounds that I can hear at the same time. Some people might judge that and say, that's a beautiful sound of water and an awful noise of the plane. Well, to me, if you're mindful, it's just all sound and you just experience it. And so in that experiencing, that leads then onto connection. And the key thing about these walks is that people connect. They connect to nature, they connect to each other, and they connect to what I call our true nature, who we truly are, rather than the person or the people that we kind of are almost forced to be in life, and sometimes we choose to be in life that isn't actually who we are. And I think learning to connect with yourself enables you to learn about yourself and then be more true to who you are. One of the reasons that I did this was I used to love walking in nature, and I just wished I could bring the man I was in nature back into the into the world. You know, you see this with people, you bump into people in nature and they all, you know, the whole gate's open for you and they say, oh, hello, how are you? But you walk down the street and nobody gives each other any eye contact or connection. It's, you know, we're bombarded by so many stimulating things that you go to London on the tube, you know, nobody wants to talk to each other. They've got their heads down in a book or on headphones. So this connection is really important, you know, connecting to nature, connecting to each other, connecting to our true nature, because when we connect, we care. And when we care, we protect. So we protect nature, we protect each other, and we protect ourselves. So the whole kind of purpose for me is about connection in that way. So you prepare, you experience, you connect, and then the final part of the walk is share. So you can, we have periods on the walk where we share our experiences, share how we connected, and then afterwards as well, the idea of connecting. And I encourage people to go onto social media, go onto the internet and share their pictures, share any video they took, share their thoughts. And in that way, you build an online and offline community. And often people sort of say to me, you know, is it about... you know, is it that you just love nature and you don't like the digital world? And I say, no, I love both. It's about how do we get the balance with both. So, you know, there's the purpose of the walk is, as I say, prepare, experience, connect, and share, and that's that, and then balance all of that. I have wonderful memories of being in nature as a child. I lived by a hill, so I would come home from school, get dressed into my dirty clothes and just go straight off up to the hill. And there was a place with a lot of pine trees, the pine woods on the side of the hill. And that was one of my favorite places to go because, you know, you could, when the thing about pine trees is you know, there are no lower branches to pine trees, but here in the UK, often what you'll get is you'll get another tree, one of our, you know, kind of, you know, British trees growing alongside one of these pine trees that have been introduced. And so I remember climbing up one of the trees and then jumping across, or, you know, reaching across to the branches in the very top of a pine tree and getting into the very top of a pine tree. Yeah, I know. I looked at them when I was a lot older, and I looked at some of the trees I used to climb, and I was horrified that I climbed that tree. But I just liked to be up in a tree, surrounded by the foliage, just looking down on the world. And it was just a different perspective. And it was my escape. It's how I used to escape from that. Life sometimes. I didn't know until recently what saunter meant. I think this is really quite interesting. I'm very interested in words and where the origin of words come from. So the words, you know, wander and saunter, is it the same word? Well, it's not the same word, it sounds different. And what I found out was that saunter comes from the French, saunter, which means Saint Earth. And there were, in the past, people would go on pilgrimages. They'd go on pilgrimages for many miles, spiritual journeys, usually to a church that had some relics from saints in them. And so this word saunter, I understand, came from the idea that often if somebody was seen wandering through the woods or wandering on a journey, people would say, well, where are you going? Who are you going to see? And if there was no particular place that they were aiming for, they would just say, oh, saunter, Saint Earth. And I just love that. Isn't that wonderful? Saint Earth. And so to saunter is to just wander, you know, I don't like the word aimless, but just to wander for the health of wandering. One of the best ways to become more mindful, other than using all your senses, is breathing. And often we don't notice our breathing. We kind of just breathe and it's done very unconsciously. So when you consciously breathe, when you bring your attention to your breath, it puts you into a different state. It kind of brings you into the present moment. And breathing's really important. I often sort of say to people, you know, how important is eating? And they'll say, well, yes, you know, probably go about 3 weeks without eating, so it's quite important. I say, well, how important is drinking? And they say, well, that's important too, because you can probably go about 3 days without drinking. And I said, so how important is breathing? And they say, well, that's really important. I said, but where's your focus in your day-to-day life? How much of your focus is on eating? How much of your focus is on drinking? And how much of your focus is on breathing? So we very quickly realised that actually the most important one is breathing, but we seem to have had our attention put onto eating and drinking. And so bringing attention to something that we're not usually putting our attention on is a great way to suddenly bring people into the present moment and more mindful. And so breathing is really important. So it'll be just about, first of all, noticing your breathing. And I have a few little exercises. One's called staying in breath, because people will often say, I got out of breath on a walk, or I lost my breath, because they're marching through without much attention to breathing. So the idea is to walk but stay in breath. So as you get to a steep incline, notice that it's an incline, notice the effect that has on your breathing, and then maybe just slow down a little so you can walk up that incline without losing your breath and staying in breath. So it's a very simple way to do it. I also have a number of fun little ways of breathing. I call it seasonal breathing, and I get people to think about the season. So you have spring, summer, autumn or fall, and winter, and breathe in the seasons. So I'll often say that in spring, it's a very busy time, very inspiring time, so that's the in-breath is spring. Autumn is a very busy time, that's when we kind of reap the rewards of what we've planted in the spring, that's the out-breath. And in between the in-breath and the out-breath, we have summer and winter. And I always say summer's for relaxing and winter is for resting. So the breathing pattern that I encourage people to use is, in spring we breathe in, we hold it and relax through the summer, and we breathe out through the autumn, and then we rest. And then we breathe in again. And so what that's doing is it's getting people to recognise the gaps between breathing in and breathing out. So rather than me tell people to hold their breath and tell people to, you know, put them into a breathing pattern, it's just about them naturally getting into a cycle, which is a natural cycle. The seasons are a natural cycle. So I call it seasonal breathing. And it's something you practice. It's not something that comes easily at first, but the more you do it, and I use it now to even go to sleep at night. So I'll just do some seasonal breathing, and it's that breathing in, relaxing, breathing out, resting, breathing in, relaxing. And what you then start to notice is that the focus goes on relaxing and resting. Interestingly, in life, when we should be relaxing in the summer, it's one of the most stressful times, because we're all trying to go on holiday and all at the same time and plan it and move all our belongings in a suitcase to somewhere else, which can be very stressful. And then, you know, look what happens in the winter with Christmas and all those other things, you know, another very stressful time. So I think in life we could probably benefit from using those periods for rest and relaxation. I think we should think differently about thinking, because I'm not so sure that the majority of the thoughts that I've had through my life have been my thoughts. I don't mean that I'm being possessed by anything, but I just think, you know, we a lot of our time is spent, you know, listening and doing what others advise us, suggest to us, teach us, tell us. Is the way things are, and I think I live my life that way, always trying to be what other people expected me to be. And so my thoughts were very much about, you know, who do they want me to be, and a lot of my thoughts were very limiting. A lot of my thoughts weren't great. I wouldn't have bought that thought, you know. I often say to people, would you buy that thought? Oh no, I wouldn't buy it. I go, well, then it has no value. Only have thoughts that have value, only have thoughts that work for you and the things you care about. So I think thinking, you know, having a different way about interpreting thoughts and how we think about thinking. I don't think thinking is exactly what we think it is. I think there's more to it. So maybe, you know, in terms of, you know, creative thinking, you know, looking forward, in a future thinking is let's relook at this and make it work better for us. Oh yes, I'm happy. Yeah, I'm happy right now. I'm happy right now, and actually, right now is all there is. You know, I can be happy right now, which means I can be happy whenever I want.
Thanks for listening to Stories That Matter, a Hawkwood podcast. To find out more about Ian Banyard and Hawkwood, visit our websites or follow us on Twitter. All of the information can be found in the show notes just below this episode. This episode was produced by Laura Bing with music by Daisy and her Cora, playing an original composition, Bertel.